Gun sales in the U.S. are seeing a major spike this year, according to commonly used data. Over the course of the spring and summer, several million more firearms have been sold in 2020 compared to the same time period last year. The CEO of one gun maker, Smith & Wesson, told shareholders last week that the demand the company was seeing this year was in some ways unprecedented. An initial jump in sales happened when the coronavirus outbreak started, and it continued during nationwide protests and counter-protests over racial injustice and policing. People have been shot and killed in some of those demonstrations, including here in Wisconsin. Timothy Litton is a professor of law at Georgia State University's College of Law. His books include Suing the Gun Industry, A Battle at the Crossroads of Gun Control and Mass Torts. Timothy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Pleasure to be with you, Rob.
Well, I know there's not exactly one-for-one data on gun sales here, but based on what we see out there, how significant a spike in firearm sales are we seeing?
We've seen sustained rises in firearm sales starting way back in January of 2020. In January of 2020, sales were up 25% from 2019 at the same time. February, that went up to 36% from 2019 at the same time. And we saw those increases going on all through the summer. In August of 2020, there was a 58% increase from 2019. This is for both handguns and long guns. And 2020 sales now are about 15 million weapons, which now exceeds the total for 2019. So in the first three quarters of this year, we've exceeded the total sales for firearms from last year.
Does this match up with past events? Are there common things that seem to lead to increases in gun sales like this?
I think these spikes are a little bit different than what we've seen before. The gun industry is a little bit unusual. In most industries, if there's some major disaster associated with the industry, whether it's the food industry and foodborne illness outbreaks, or it's the appliance industry and there's some sort of fire, industries do very poorly when there are disasters associated with their products. The opposite tends to be true in the firearms industry. We see spikes in firearm sales in the wakes of mass shootings. So every time there's a mass shooting, whether it's in Sandy Hook or it's in Parkland in Florida, any of these mass shootings are usually accompanied in the aftermath by a spike in gun sales. And the reason for that is that many gun owners are fearful in the wake of mass shootings that there'll be a political reaction to increase restrictions on firearm sales. And so they tend to go out and buy more firearms. So it's kind of countercyclical if you think about it. That has not been the case with the spikes that we've been seeing recently. The spikes that we're seeing recently aren't associated with disasters associated with firearms like mass shootings. They're associated, as you mentioned at the front of the segment, with the pandemic and protests and urban unrest and increasing uncertainty about the economic future as the pandemic continues. There are also, I think, some increased fears about crime that are associated both with economic uncertainty and the unrest we've seen in many cities.
Do we have a precedent for this kind of thing? I know we haven't seen anything like COVID-19 for, like a century, so there may not be a lot of data to match up there.
Well, as I mentioned before, in the wake of mass shootings, and also when people are worried that there are going to be elected leaders who are likely to favor gun control, there tend to be increases in sales. And there are spikes after mass shootings generally in the last decade or so. But this idea of sort of a sustained set of spikes month by month over the course of a year does seem to be relatively new. And I think it's the convergence of these various pressures, the pandemic, protests and urban unrest, and economic uncertainty that have really all come together in almost the perfect storm. There has been over the last 3 years what they call the Trump slump in the firearms industry. Because there's been less fear about gun control with the election of Donald Trump as president, there have been fewer people going out to purchase more weapons in order to make sure that they have, weapons available if they want them, because they're just not worried about future restrictions. So this has really been a turnaround for the gun industry in the last year.
Is there any way to tell from available data, Timothy, whether this is a case of people who already own guns going out to buy more guns or a growth in first-time gun ownership?
We know anecdotally, and this is largely from press reports and interviews and going out and talking to people who operate gun stores, that this is a mix of first-time buyers and repeat buyers. There are people coming to stores for the first time who've never purchased a firearm, who've been motivated to do so by the current climate. And there are also many people who already have a small arsenal of firearms who are just stocking up on more, which is also a relatively common pattern. I think there's an increase in the number of first-time buyers that's somewhat unusual in the current situation.
Talking to Timothy Litton, professor of law at Georgia State University, looking at a big increase in gun sales in 2020. Month after month, we see big increases compared to the previous year. you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you, if you're willing to share your story, have you bought a firearm this year? Was it your first ever or a new one in your collection? What led you to make the decision to do that and do that when you did it? Call in at 800-642-1234. Timothy, are there concerns with safety, more firearms being out there, maybe leading to more household firearm accidents, more risk of suicide, that kind of thing?
I think there's always a fear about lack of training when there's a large spike in the number of first-time purchasers. And that's something that's occurring now. A lot of first-time purchasers have no experience with guns. They're buying them, you know, in a relatively short span of time. There are a lot of them purchasing them. And as a result, there are some worries that they may not be receiving the training for handling and storing those weapons that they should. And that's likely to give rise to an increase in firearms accidents and possibly suicides as well.
I've seen a concern that, hey, if this is a time when we're not doing activities in person, that first-time gun buyer may not be going to take that firearms training in person because of the pandemic. Is that part of the concern here?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. You know, a lot of places where you can get firearms training are associated with the gun stores where you purchase the weapons, and they tend to also be social places. And it's very difficult at a firing range to maintain social distancing and masks, and people who may be worried about that may be reticent to show up to get the training that they would normally otherwise get if they were first-time firearms purchasers.
As I mentioned earlier, Smith & Wesson reported big sales, and in their press release, they talked about how they were able to ramp up production to keep up with demand. Is that something that that's been true across the firearms industry, or have there, as far as you know, have there been shortages of certain types of firearms if companies and stores couldn't keep up?
I'm not aware of a lot of shortages in the United States. I think the domestic market has largely been well supplied, although that's with the exception of the Remington Corporation. Remington, which is a longtime gun manufacturer, has been having financial troubles and went into bankruptcy. They couldn't keep up with the supply chain. That was related to a variety of legal problems. But in the United States, I think there's a relatively robust supply of new firearms. I have been told, however, that in Canada, with the advent of hunting season, there have been increasing shortages along the supply line for supplying firearms to Canada. And I think that a lot of foreign buyers are seeing this shortage as a result of the spike of sales in the United States domestically.
Taking a longer view, have you seen much progress made in either direction when it comes to gun laws, loosening up regulations or stronger support of the Second Amendment, depending on how you look at it, or new gun laws at local or state levels?
This is an area in American politics where people tend to get increasingly entrenched wherever they start. So we see very often in the aftermath of mass shooting events where people's minds are very much on firearms and firearms policy, that in states where majorities of people tend to favor gun control, we see additional controls put in place, restrictions on sales or certain types of weapons. And in states where the majority of people tend to favor liberalization of gun rights, the response to mass shootings often is liberalization of your ability to carry a weapon, either concealed or openly. And so it really comes down to where states are already, and they tend to just get more entrenched wherever they start in the aftermath. So I don't think we're likely to see many changes other than, you know, increasing extremes in terms of restrictions in some states and liberalization in others.
We continue our talk with Timothy Litton, professor of law at Georgia State University, author of the book Suing the Gun Industry, looking at the rise in gun sales we've seen in the United States this year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you one of the many Americans who's purchased a firearm this year? Do you want to call in and tell us what led you to make that decision to make it in 2020, first time, or another in your collection? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Jacob is with us in Oregon. Jacob, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Jacob?
I just wanted to say that I haven't bought any new guns because I have enough, but it makes sense to me why people are going out to get guns because of the whole talk about defunding police and all that. So kind of I think it's leading people to think that they're going to have to police their own streets if they're going to move forward with getting rid of police.
Jacob, thanks a lot for the call. And I think that's one common possible motivation, Timothy, that people are worried with criticism of the police, no actual defunding really of the police anywhere at this point, but the concern over what might happen in the future.
I think that's right. One thing that's interesting about firearm sales is that, like many products, they're fueled by different kinds of narratives or stories that people tell themselves or that they believe in. And I think typically, you know, many people who purchase multiple firearms purchase them because they're really concerned about personal liberty. They believe very strongly that the right to private firearms ownership is a central feature of American liberty, and it's part of what keeps the country free and protects us against tyranny. And so they're mostly worried about big government, and they're people who oppose big government. And because they oppose big government, they tend to, you know, believe that it's useful to have a lot of privately owned firearms. Here we're talking about an opposite kind of narrative where people are worried about small government. In other words, the shrinking of government, the defunding of the police, the idea that there's going to be anarchy because the government's actually not playing a robust enough role. And because of that, they're going out to purchase more firearms. So there are these two almost opposite narratives, you know, one about big government and the need to purchase firearms in order to protect ourselves against big government, and another about small government and the shrinking of the government and the need to protect ourselves in an age of anarchy if we don't have adequate first responders and police services. And so I think both of these things are actually fueling firearm sales in the United States. And I think the caller is absolutely right that this worry about defunding the police and fears of anarchy have been part of this story this year.
Thanks for that call, Jacob. We'll go to John now in La Crosse. John, hello.
Yes, I was just wondering if there is a, during the purchase of these weapons, is there a tally on who's buying them in terms of race? And is this a white issue of buying weapons? I've been around for many years, and whenever there's a conflict, a social conflict, it seems that there's an outpouring of wanting to buy weapons and using that as a solution instead of an intellectual one. We have thousands and thousands of universities and people of intelligence that we can't come to a social issue that we have to get involved with weapons in order to destroy one another. And
John, I gotcha. A couple different points there. First of all, are we able to track the demographics, I guess, of who is buying guns, Timothy?
We don't have global data on this. This is not the kind of information that's tracked in background checks, but we do have anecdotal evidence that certainly starting in the summer that increases in firearms purchases were, you know, among people of a variety of different races. It's not just a white phenomenon. Even during the beginning of the pandemic, you know, here in Georgia, there were interviews in the local newspapers. There were people of all different, you know, ethnic and racial backgrounds worried about the withdrawal of essential services during the pandemic and the overtaxing of first responders. And they were feeling a lot of insecurity and they went out and purchased firearms. I think that traditionally, one often sees the NRA and the firearms lobby and gun rights advocates as a predominantly white movement. And it's certainly, you know, that's part of its brand in some ways. But I think that the current firearms sales and the industry's attitude is much broader than that. And the industry's happy to sell firearms to pretty much anybody who wants to purchase them. And they market, you know, very broadly. So I don't think it's a phenomenon of one race alone.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go now to Gwen with us in Madison. Gwen, hi.
Hello. I bought my first gun this year, kind of as a 65th birthday present for myself, long before there were the riots, civil unrest, whatever you want to call the protests. But then we got hit with COVID-19, and so all of the gun ranges are closed. I haven't even put bullets in it yet, much less shot it.
So, Gwen, was this for like a hobby, in effect?
Yeah, I bought it as a hobby just to have a different hobby to get me out out and about and meet
Thanks.
New people, and that didn't work well.
Sorry. Well, good luck to you, Gwen. Thanks for the call. And that's a reminder, Timothy, a lot of people own firearms for a hobby or pastime, whether it's target shooting, even though the ranges are closed, or, of course, hunting.
Yes, I think that's certainly part of the market, but I think it's unlikely that that's what's driving the current spike in sales. I don't think that hobbyists have become overly enthusiastic because of the pandemic or protests or urban unrest. But Gwen makes an important point, which is that as a first-time gun buyer, she's been especially careful to make sure that she doesn't operate that weapon or start to use that weapon until she's had proper training. And one would hope that that's a widespread sentiment among first-time firearms owners. And if it is, I think that we're likely to see, you know, responsible use. I think people who are properly trained have a far less are far less risk of the types of accidents or misuse that we've seen with firearms. So I think, you know, as long as Gwen is an example of, you know, first-time firearms owners, we would be in a better position.
Thanks a lot for that call, Gwen, at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Timothy Litton from Georgia State University's Law School, looking at a big jump in gun sales in the United States this year. Back to your calls now. Aaron is with us in Sturgeon Bay. Aaron, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have been an anti-gun person my whole life, probably more than anybody. My mom had two gun accidents in her house when she was young. We never were allowed to have guns in our house. And my 18-year-old nephew in Minnesota was shot to death 20 times by a 16-year-old who's now out of jail. He died. My nephew died. And I was always very against guns, but seeing all this left-wing violence by Antifa and Black Lives Matter pushed by Democrats is really, and pulling people from their cars and killing them, it's really making me want to get a gun and get proper training. I don't want to get a gun and not have proper training. But it's a frightening thing to see night after night in these Democrat cities, and they just let the people go. They don't prosecute them because they want to keep the violence up because they think it's politically good for them because they want to get Trump out.
Thanks a lot for the call. I'm going a little far afield there, Timothy, but he's not alone in that perception of chaos again.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned before, there are a lot of different stories that are driving firearm sales in the United States. And one of those stories is a story of social unrest and the unraveling of social fabric and the withdrawal of the police. And I think those sorts of fears are fears that traditionally the firearms industry has sought to capitalize on, if not also to feed at many points. I think a big part of the firearms industry's problem is that they actually make a product unlike most products, which generally does not wear out. So when you purchase a firearm, if it's well made, it shouldn't wear out ever. And so the real problem is that once you've sold, you know, everyone in America a gun, how are you going to sell more guns? And that's part of the reason that the marketing requires, you know, this constant feeding of these narratives. And one of the narratives is that we live in a time of great social unrest and insecurity, and that it's a group of people who don't have the best interests of the country at heart, and everybody needs to arm themselves in order to protect themselves against those sorts of elements in this society.
We should talk a little bit, I guess, about perception versus reality. We have seen an uptick in some violent crime and homicide in some American cities this year, but we've been at a low, right, in recent years compared to, say, the 80s and 90s. How much does it matter what actual crime statistics are versus our perceptions of them?
Well, as a general matter, people often have a fear of crime that is not well correlated with actual crime statistics. So this is pretty much, you know, a long-term phenomenon in the United States, that many times in the United States in the political cycle, people have a heightened sense of fear about crime, even though crime rates are going down. So I don't actually think there's generally much relationship between crime rates and the fear of crime. The crime rates are driven by, you know, policing practices and economic opportunity and a variety of other socioeconomic factors. And fear of crime is largely driven by the media, and the media responds to all sorts of things other than crime statistics when they talk about crime. What's featured on television? What sorts of programs are we watching? What are political leaders saying? So I don't think there's really much of a correlation between them. And the firearms industry is driven not by crime statistics. It's driven by crime perception.
Time for one more caller. Logan is with us in Green Bay. Logan, hi.
Hi. I'm totally against the use of guns. It was instilled in me by my dad and other members of the family that we should never own guns. Look at the slaughter in the United States. Americans are slaughtering each other. And yet the gun lobby wouldn't cede an inch. Thank you, sir.
Logan, thanks a lot for the call. And Logan, another point of view on guns, thinks we use them too much to solve our problems, as one of our earlier callers did as well, Timothy.
I think the idea of private firearms ownership is really a very American idea in many ways. It's driven by a narrative that says that, unlike many countries that have suffered from tyranny of overreaching governments, the United States, for all of its problems, whether it's been slavery or economic inequality, has never really had a tyrannical government. And I think a lot of people chalk that up to the idea of widespread private firearms ownership. And I think it's a very big part of the narrative of sort of the national story in many parts of the country where firearms ownership runs high. I know that I live in Georgia, and it's a very big part of the narrative here outside of Atlanta and north and south and rural Georgia areas. So I think that, you know, for many people, it's just hard to understand why Americans are so wedded to the idea of private firearms ownership, but it's very much part of the American story for many Americans.
Timothy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Timothy Litton is a professor of law at Georgia State University. His books include Suing the Gun Industry. He was with us to talk about a big jump in firearm sales in the United States we've seen so far this year.